Blog Talk Radio.
Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. With a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you'll end up paying over $400,000 after interest. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth System. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your debts. Let me send you a powerful free CD. For your free CD, call 1-800-338-2884. 1-800-338-2884. 1-800-338-2884.
Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up there. Yeah, yeah. It don't matter. Yeah, yeah. What race, creed, or color. Everybody, we need each other. Wake up, everybody. Well, see, we need, wake up, everybody. We need, no more sleeping in bed, no more backward thinking, ahead.
Technological world that we have today, we want to filter out some of the noise and the 30-second sound bites that unfairly represent the truth, thereby misleading the general public. We aim to speak truth to the lies, and we want to start a grassroots movement to get the public to act in the upcoming elections, to make informed decisions and elect those that truly have the best interests of the country and the nation at heart, not those with special interests, big business, signing pledges that impede the spirit of cooperation. We believe this will help to elect government officials that will set the country back on the path of prosperity and be a leader for the rest of the world. Our goal is basically to get President Obama reelected and to take back the House and maintain control of the Senate. It's a call to action as we need to fight back before Republicans completely hand over the government to corporations and setting labor back 100 years. We need to mobilize an army of Democratic, independent, and Republican voters to reverse and stop the current direction of the Republican Party, or more so, the Tea Party faction. It's going to be an uphill battle, but together we can do this. We cannot afford to sleep on it. This show and our success will only be possible with your ideas and your action. This is a vehicle for us to discuss and share information that doesn't always make the mainstream media. So please, don't be afraid to chime in the conversation. You may have information, an idea, or a totally different perspective that we haven't considered, so share with us. Our call-in number, 646-378-0763, and you need to press 1 if you want to speak. Again, that's 646-378-0763. Before we begin, one of the first things I want to do today is wish a happy birthday to my firstborn daughter, Shantae. This is a momentous occasion for her, and I'm glad to see, and hopefully she's happy and getting everything she wishes for. Other news this week, the Congressional Black Caucus meets this week in Washington, D.C. The event started Monday and will continue through Sunday, September 25th. You can visit their website at http://cbcfinc.org. That's cbcfinc.org. They have a plethora of different events taking place over the next few days. Each and every day is filled with exciting events, meetings, conferences, receptions. Get out and meet some of our representatives and make yourself known. Make your feelings known for them to act on your behalf. One of the things I want to alert the family to also is we've drawn up a petition to present to the Congressional Black Caucus to come together to support President Obama for re-election. We want them to stop all the divisive comments that we're seeing in the news, and the petition is available on Facebook in our group Take Back the House in 2012, and it's also been reposted to various members' pages. So please, if you haven't done so already, sign the petition so we can present it this week while the Congressional Black Caucus is in session hosting these various events. Also, we just found out the dedication of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial will take place the weekend of October 15th. There will also be a jobs rally sponsored by the National Action Network, Reverend Al Sharpton. So if you can put that on your calendar and make every effort to make it to that event, I'm sure it will be quite worth your while. And it's a fantastic memorial. If you haven't seen it as of yet, it's really awesome. So make every attempt that you can to come out and visit the memorial and hopefully be there for the dedication. I know when it was originally scheduled, President Barack Obama was scheduled to speak at the dedication. I am making the assumption, I haven't heard yet, but I am making the assumption that he will be there for this event that has been rescheduled. It was rescheduled because of all the bad weather we had with Hurricane Irene. Okay. Today, I'm going to have a special guest by the name of Catherine McClendon, a.k.a. Joan Royes, and she is a contributing writer on the website Democrats for Progress. If you haven't read any of her works, you really need to go out and check out the website Democrats for Progress. She puts together some really interesting articles that make you think, that give you a different perspective on what happened today, and also to get you to step up and take action. We can't sit back and wait for things to happen, as we saw the results of that in the 2010 elections where the Tea Party actually took over the House. And I'll just say this before I bring Catherine on, Ms. McClendon on. I've been watching some of the special elections that were taking place in various states around the country. I won't mention what particular state or district this was, but I saw the results, and there was one district that had roughly 1,787 people that were eligible to vote. Of that 1,787, 41 people actually voted in that district. Now, I don't know how you feel about it, but I thought that was extremely poor as far as the turnout. And one of the things I want to caution us on, and we need to caution all of our friends, relatives, everybody you know, we can't take our right to vote for granted. We need to make our voice heard. We need to make an impact. It's more important now in this time and era that we're in than it has ever been. And, you know, there are people all around the world, one, that wish they had.
Sorry about that, family. It looks like we might have had a hiccup on the network and lost connectivity there for a moment. Can everybody hear me right now? Can you hear me in the chat room? All right. Well, as I was in the middle of my rant, like I said, we have a special guest tonight, Ms. Catherine McClendon, who is a writer for Democrats for Progress. She has written some very important pieces and given some very important perspectives, I think, on some of the issues that we're facing today. And I'd like to bring her on right now.
Hello, I'm here.
Hello, Ms. McClendon. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Sorry for that little hiccup we had there.
Yeah, well, I figured I'd stay on and something would happen to it. So here we are.
What can I say? They're out to get us. They're out to get us. And I want to welcome you to the show. If you could, how about telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, you know, I got involved in politics after the 2000 election, certainly, and what I saw, you know, that was happening in this country in reference to the American people and the fact that we weren't really in true control. So that was a rude awakening. And from that point on, you know, it just kind of sparked the passion in me that as a citizen, I should be able to make a difference. So basically that's what I did for a few years was to get on the internet and give my point of view, the way that I looked at things. And, you know, I'm just a normal person, but I have a perspective that I think is not jaded by politics, you know, politicians or the media or all of that. So I was kind of this dispassionate stand bystander, and now I've been writing, you know, since then, and I just want people to understand what's really going on, and I want people to understand what our priorities need to be in order to get to a better place. The reason the name of our site is called DemocratsForProgress.com is exactly for the reason that we support progress, period. We're not going to nitpick. We're not going to be dissatisfied unless we have it all. We look at the glass that's half full, and we take a drink because we are, you know, dying of thirst in the desert.
And just how many other members do you have in Democrats for Progress?
Well, it's a growing group. We really established this website back in November. We got a little bit dispirited in reference to other websites that we saw out there that, you know, called themselves liberal websites. And we felt that there was too much attention or too much criticism aimed solely at the president and no one else. And we felt that, I feel like that's a bad strategy. It's a bad electoral strategy because it's easy to find flaws in any one of us. But to understand that this was going to be a long slog, which the president warned us about on victory night, he literally told us that, you know, we would get there, but it would take, you know, more than just one term, maybe even. So, you know, the point is to you have to support someone. You can't be fair-weathered. And then you also can't be spoiled where, you know, if you don't get what you want, you're walking away. The priority has got to be progress in general. And we know what the alternative is. So when you put it all together, I guess the site is for those that are pragmatic, that understand nuance, are thoughtful, and just want to see this country go where it needs to go in order to compete. We're not interested in fighting each other. We're not interested in, you know, high school-type mentality. We're really more interested in imparting information that's going to help people go out there and make their case to support this president and as well other Democrats.
Okay. Do you have any idea, I'll say, I mean, I know you've been sharing a lot of information with us on the Facebook group Take Back the House in 2012, and that's actually how we became aware of Democrats for Progress and the work that you were doing. Do you have any idea of how many other groups or how many hits your site is getting across the country Do we need to actually, try to do a marketing campaign to get you out to other groups and get you noticed by other groups as well?
Well, we're doing quite well, actually, considering that we're new, and we've gotten, Alexa rating. We're not quite up there yet, but we're 179,000, something like that, which actually isn't too bad because there certainly are a lot of choices out there. I think that as the election season ramps up, that we're going to, see more and more traffic. My articles have attracted quite a few. I mean, one of probably the most trafficked article was a letter that I wrote to my representative, Barbara Lee, and it was called "Dear Representative Barbara Lee, Chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, Can We Talk?" And this particular piece did get, into the thousands in terms of the Facebook hits, as well as Joe Madison read that letter out loud on his morning show. And so it's gotten a lot of feedback. Now, Barbara Lee is my representative. I also know her personally. We're both members of the same church. My husband is a minister at that church. I've attended some of her birthday parties and so forth. And the letter was not in any way, negative to her. It was just a general letter to give African Americans a sense of what Barack Obama has accomplished. I find that in today's media and in today's discourse, we don't really cite the facts. We really just come up with these emotions that we feel, and based on those, we have discussions. And I think it's important that facts are presented to everyone in order for people to be able to rationally make determinations. So what I did in this letter was to list all of the things that it is that President Barack Obama has done or has help pass that really does help the African-American community as well as just the country in general.
That letter was actually the work that brought you to my attention and those of us in the Facebook group Take Back the House in 2012. I think pretty much everybody in the group read that letter, and we reposted it onto our own Facebook pages and disseminated it out as far as we could. It was definitely an excellent letter. Your latest two works, Misinterpreting a Man's Strength is Our Weakness, and Our Mission If We Choose to Accept It, Mission Impossible, I thought those were excellent works as well. Can you kind of talk to us about what you felt were the more salient points in those two works?
Well, misinterpreting a man's strength is our weakness, not his, it really talks about what strength is supposed to be as opposed to what it's been marketed to us. A man's strength is not how strong, how much weight he can lift. It's not how hard his footstep is when he walks into a room. But there's a table of various strengths that make up what one would call courage. So it's the courage of standing up against unpopular opinion, especially when it comes from within, which is something that I've noted in this president. He does not necessarily dance to the tune that we choose. He was elected president, and he was elected to lead. And leading means not listening to what everybody has to say and then doing that, because everybody has various opinions. It's being able to determine what it is that you feel needs to happen and then kind of holding strong if, you have a real belief in it. I think that I found it insulting, really, that people have been stating that this president is weak. In particular, him being an African-American and what he's had to go through in his life to get to this highest pinnacle of our country, of the world, really. And so I just found it ironic that people were using that to describe him. But I think that has to do with using a person's strength and trying to make it a weakness. And the fact that he's patient.
Do you think that more of that was the fact that the mainstream media kept playing up the fact that every time one of these issues came up with the Republican Party, rather than him standing fast, as I'll say most Democrats wanted him to do, he took on a view of trying to compromise with the Republican Party to get things done in a bipartisan way to move things forward for the company, for the country, and possibly, I'll say at that time, maybe trying to look at it from a standpoint of, you know, his view is I don't really think they're going to do anything to really take the country down. I think they want the best for the country, and so if we have to compromise, then we can compromise to get that done, to try to work together. And I think he's at a point now where he sees that that's not going to happen, and where everybody was wanting to come out very strong with his job plan and everything after Labor Day break, that he's now done that, and people are viewing that more of a strength than the fact that, as you say, you know, he was strong in his resolve to get things done, just maybe the way he went about it and the way the mainstream media portrayed him as trying to present him as weak, again, because mainstream media is controlled by the conservatives, and they're going to do anything they can from a liberal progressive point to basically make him look bad for the coming election.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree with all of those things. I do think that, you know, the media is the one who decides what we are supposed to think, and we have to try to combat that. Patience is a strength, and one of the things that you will note is that at this point, right now, the way that the election is shaping up in terms of issues, the Republicans are going to have to defend whether, you know, the fact that millionaires somehow should not get a tax increase. That's what they're going to have to defend. They're going to have to defend corporations. That's what they're going to have to defend. There's a reason why we're talking about that now as opposed to last summer or as opposed to any other time. The reason is because Barack Obama was patient enough to deal with the deficit issue first, although that's not what we necessarily felt like should happen. But the deficit issue, had he not dealt with it at the time that he was forced to by the media and by the Republicans, had he not dealt with that issue then, it wouldn't have been put away. And therefore, it could have been what the Republicans would have used as their election issue. Now they're not able to do that. So in essence, he's painted them in a corner, and that took him taking all of the hits that he took. Had he not, you know, had he said, no, we're just going to talk about jobs right now, he still wouldn't have gotten anything passed necessarily. So standing strong and standing up doesn't necessarily give us what it is that we need. It just seems like it. And that's part of that article in terms of strength and what is it really. And to stand up and you know, pound your fist and stomp your foot and talk really loud and call people names, that's what we kind of almost want to see, because that's what we saw Bush doing. And we kind of want to see the exact opposite coming from a liberal standpoint. But is it really going to get us what we want, what we need? I think that politics is more complicated than that. So it's not about instant gratification, which comes back to patience. And that's why it is a strength and a virtue. And he has that. We as a society don't, you know, to be honest.
So, I mean, and I guess going along with that, what's your view then? I'll say, you know, you kind of talked a little bit how the Democrats, at least those in Congress, took somewhat of a divisive view in their comments going forward as far as what the president was doing and why he was doing it. I guess not understanding, and I think the issue was is they didn't understand the strategy, or they didn't understand, I'll say, the method to the madness. And then you have people, you know, like a Tavis Smiley and a Cornel West that are also going out and feeding conservative media with things that saying he's not standing up or doing enough for the black community. What are your views on that?
Well, I think everyone has opinions. And the question becomes, which opinions are going to prevail? I think that anybody can be used as a tool and they have to understand that. I understand the need, people that have this need in a democracy to feel like they should be able to criticize. I respect that wholeheartedly. The problem is, though, one has to be strategic about what they do, what they say, and when they do and say it. And I find that that's the part that's lacking, that because for so long we were all against Bush, we didn't have a strategy per se. Our only strategy was to be against whatever it was that he said, something that you're seeing now with Republicans in reference to this president. So we really didn't have a strategy. We just needed to get him out. That was how simple things were. Then what happened is that we were all able to mobilize behind a figure, and that would be Barack Obama during the 2008 election. Again, that was easy on the one hand. Strategically speaking, it was really about talking to your neighbors, getting people excited about this man, and that was really about it, getting everybody out to vote. Now, once that happened and he did win, then Democrats were faced with a much more complicated playing field. Now we had to start trying to figure out what it was that we even wanted from this president. How was he going to be able to get it to us? We almost forgot that there were blue dog Democrats in Congress that really were what we would call Republicans lights, and they came from districts that had been Republican in the past. So we, although we thought that at the time of the election we were home free, we had just really just begun. And now it was time to start strategizing. And I don't think that that happened. Instead, we waited for this individual, this president, to do for us what it was that we had been wanting done all of these 8 years that we were pent up and upset. And that was where the realism stopped. It's impossible for anybody to turn over everything in a year or two or three or four even. And again, Barack Obama warned us about that. So I think that when you hear the discontent, the pointing fingers, the criticism, without anyone acknowledging or without a lot of people acknowledging what has been done, they really are looking at that glass of water, and in their case, it's almost near empty. And it's almost as though they'd rather say no, decline the water, and they're out in the desert, and they're dying of thirst, but somehow they won't take the water. So I believe that they think that if they push him from the left, that that will make Barack Obama be less of a tendency to go towards the right. They're trying to keep him kind of centered. And that could make sense. The problem is that a lot of this criticism is personal, and it's not based on facts. It's based on feelings.
Well, do you think it's more based on personal, or do you think, I'll say from the Democratic side it may be personal. From the Republican side, and I know the mainstream media doesn't want to touch on it, and there's a lot of folks that really don't want to go there. It's like it's another third rail. But my own personal feeling, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it, is from the Republican side of this thing, I think it's mainly, and I won't say Republicans in general, I'll say Tea Party, because from what I understand, when the Tea Party first formulated, I mean, they had what I would consider an admirable aim. I mean, they were concerned about the country's growing in debt, and what that would do to the future for them, their families, and their children. However, I think it's been commandeered now by these hate group factions, such as the KKK, neo-Nazis, skinheads and such, and Southern Poverty Law Center has kind of proven some of that out as they've done studies to show how much they're growing, and I think that's really become the core of the Tea Party. So I think more of the actions and things that we're hearing out of the Republican side of the House are based more on his race than anything else.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Tea Party is kind of like a big tent for those who hate for various reasons, or they hate various things that it you know, race as well as Democrats, as well as the policies, and again, as well as getting even for the left and what they feel the left did to George Bush when he was president. Although Barack Obama hasn't earned any of the ire that George Bush did by starting wars and, you know, bringing us to a meltdown and on, not even winning the first election, you know, really. What you have now is someone that, you know, was elected with a 53% majority and who won 365 electoral votes. So we're not dealing with, you know, apples and apples, but they don't realize that. They really do not like Democrats, liberals, progressives. They don't like minorities that much unless the minority is singing their song. They don't like government. They don't like taxes. They don't like. That's basically the Tea Party's MO. They just don't like anything. And I think that they came in at a very convenient time. I don't necessarily, I mean, CNBC is really who propelled the Tea Party out there. It was a rant that was done by one of the commentators, Centelli, I believe his name is. And he basically was saying, why is the government going to bail out not only the banks, but the mortgage holders? Because there had been talk about that happening. And that is really what got the Tea Party going. It wasn't the banks as much as it was the fact that ordinary people that were losing their homes might get a lifeline. And they were against that.
And that was the same. I mean, I've gone back and looked at, you know, a lot of the things that happened during the Great Depression and what FDR did to try to bring the country back from that. And one of the things that he did during that time period was to, you know, levy an extreme tax on the wealthy. But they also, the number I want to say was around 4 million homeowners at that time were in trouble of losing their homes, and the government actually paid off their mortgages. So I think a lot of stuff that we're seeing in regards to the actions that need to be put forward, just like in President Obama's job plan and now the economic plan to increase taxes on the wealthy, I think a lot of that has come from what has worked in the past, and that definitely worked under FDR. To kind of turn the country around. I mean, it took quite a long time during that time period because they said he didn't necessarily act soon enough to do some of those things. But when he did, I mean, and again, just back in that era also, the Republicans were screaming bloody murder for him wanting to raise taxes and bail out these folks that were about to lose their homes. But the banks aren't doing anything. Like you said, the banks got these huge bailouts, and they could have gone back. I think one of the big holdups to our economy is the housing market and the fact that, you know, people are upside down on their homes.
Yeah.
And typically what you see happen is most people, the model that was occurring at the time was people would buy a house, live in it for 5, 6, 7 years, and then want to upgrade to a newer home or a bigger home.
Right.
Well, you can't do that now when you're upside down. So what really needs to happen in this country is they need to actually refinance all of these homes and refinance them at the current market level, because they're not going to lose anything. They're going to write off the debt anyway, and in 3 years they'll be back to where they were anyway.
Well, but
so
that's exactly what has to happen
to move our economy forward.
Well, that's exactly what the modification help that was put through by the Democrats, by Barack Obama, was about. And what happened is it got a lot of bad press in terms of banks for a while were not willing to play that particular game. And so they would put you through so much until people would walk away. But the Modification Act worked.
Did the modification program actually reset the market value of the home, or did it just modify payments to allow you to stay in your home?
No, because, I'll tell you from personal experience that we had our home, we had our mortgage modified, and they took off $90,000 in principal off of our loan.
Okay.
And it was easy
now,
to
do. I understand in some cases where people were doing that, or maybe it's folks that walked away from their homes, and once the home was sold or whatever, the difference in what the loan value was and what the market value was, instead of forgiving that difference to people, they actually issued 1099s, which they were responsible then for the taxes on that amount.
No, there was a law that kept residential homes as an exemption from that. So that was
okay.
Not the case.
Okay.
But let me say this, that I speaking for myself, but I have a 2% loan. It's a 2%. I pay,
right.
And it has impounded my taxes and all of that. And the point is that people got discouraged, though, because there was a lot of bad press about it. There was not, you know, a systematic effort by the media to inform anyone. And so, again, the media came in, and instead of helping the country, it actually worked against this program that would have helped millions of people if they would have just stayed fast on to being able to, remodify their mortgage. And so that whole program kind of got lost. Now it's happening again, and people are able to take advantage. Just do the paperwork. I believe it's 31%. You have to be able to pay out of your earnings in order for them to consider you, 31%
going
to your mortgage.
So that program is still active now?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Okay.
And,
all right.
And
well, that's excellent, because
much
I think a lot
more,
of folks...
The banks are allowing it much easier. And we did ours through Wells Fargo, so this is a big bank. So it's not as though you have to find a tiny bank somewhere. So it's a matter of just getting informed. And that's the point. It's a matter of being informed about an awful lot of things. And I know a lot of people just don't have that kind of time. It's difficult. And so that's why we really got to get the strategy going, where we're all talking to one another, where we are, coming up with all of the good things that have been done by this administration, because there are plenty. And we need to get our facts straight. We need to have those lists. Some people don't like lists. Too bad. We need to be able to highlight all of the great things that have been done, because the difference between where we could have been and where we are is one that people cannot measure, but it is so, so wide until it would frighten us to know where that day when Lehman Brothers was allowed to be, to fail, where we were at that exact moment in September and where we are now. The difference is like night and day. We might not understand that or appreciate that, and I understand why we wouldn't. When you can't see it, when it's not tangible, that happens. But the truth is that where we could be is at 15% unemployment, which would be, 30% in the black community? We could
exactly.
be, right, we could be out in the streets in droves. Corporations don't really care. What we have to understand about this country is that it's what they call, the cliche, the browning of America. And it's going to be very soon that minorities in this country are going to represent a majority when pulled together.
Exactly. Exactly.
And the powers to be, they don't like that. They don't really want that, because electorally speaking, that's not good for them. That's not good for the good old boys that have been at the trough for all of these years. And so, go ahead.
Well, let me ask you this question then, because I was gonna get you off into some of these other topics and things about voter suppression and everything else. But
yeah.
But being a woman, let me ask you, this assault that the Republican Party has launched against women's reproductive rights.
Mm-hmm.
What is your view on that? And you think that that's part of this strategy? In other words, for them to try to maintain being a majority for as long as they can.
Well, I think there's a couple of ways. See, the thing about Republicans is they are very strategic. They don't have any policies to speak of that anyone would be attracted to. So this is what they do instead. They go by strategies. And one of them certainly, their attack on women's reproductive rights, it's really you know, taking us back to the 50s. In a way, that's where they'd like to go. That's where they'd like to live. That's the world that they created. And
yeah, I believe that. I really believe that.
And so that's where they want to be. And part of that is making sure that two-family households, you know, don't get too rich, right? When you got two people working,
mm-hmm.
the woman's kind of out there being independent, making the money just as much as the man. And they, when it's pulled together, you know, they have some real purchasing power. What they're doing, though, is they're keeping wages low, and they'd like for them to go lower. That's why they don't like unions. They would like for people that make hardly any money to be taxed, you know, so they could have even less. They don't want to help anyone that doesn't, you know, that's not generating any money, because they want a kingdom of serfs. At the end of the day, what they'd like is a big labor pool like China has, and they'd like to keep our wages as low as possible so that the corporations can have a giant bottom line. It's class warfare. What they're accusing, you know, the Democrats of right now, it's projection. That's what they've been doing. And, in fact, they
mm-hmm.
project in every single instance. They project in reference to voters' rights. They call it what do they call it?
Voter suppression?
No, they
voter
call
fraud.
It
okay.
voter fraud. We call it voter suppression because that's what they're really doing in 23 states already.
And in the cases that they've actually claimed voter fraud, which is one of the explanations that they're giving for these new voter ID and voter registration requirements, is that there's been so much voter fraud, but they've never been able to provide any data that substantiates or corroborates that.
Well, that's because they're not into facts. They're into language. So it doesn't matter
right.
what the facts are. It just matters what they say. You know, so it's the big lie. I mean, if you repeat it enough, people that don't have information, you know, it sinks in after a while. And that's basically what they're doing. I call it, you know, election campaign by 1,000 cuts. They basically will do whatever it takes in reference to whether it's curving voting rights through ID laws or early voting or getting rid of the funding of organizations that registers voters or whether it's redistricting, which they were able to get done because they won 2010 a lot of the state's legislatures, and so they've done the redistricting that will keep them in political power. Now they're talking about splitting the electoral vote in states that are large, but that the population center are only in particular districts. So what you have is
yeah.
a state like Pennsylvania where, you know, Barack Obama could literally win the state in terms of numbers and still only get half of the electoral votes for that state. So they're also doing things like hit pieces. If you and they're aimed at specific constituents, you'll note that there's a book out that is trying to say that Barack Obama's White House is hostile to women. So that's getting to the women. The facts are not there to support that claim, but it's still out there. There's also the talk of the Jewish vote. So they're trying to get at that constituent in terms of Barack Obama is just as pro-Jewish as any president has been. He's been a little bit more of an honest broker, which is what everyone supposedly wanted, but now, no, that's not what we want.
and I going back to the point you were making about the Jewish community, I mean, mm-hmm. Their mainstream media has tried to play at the fact that this one Republican won in this district up in New York
mm-hmm.
as that being all about that. When
right.
in fact, my understanding is that district was one that has always been extremely conservative.
Right.
Part of it was, I'll say, a knee-jerk reaction from the Jewish community. But my understanding is the other part of that was because of the state just passing the right for gays and lesbians to marry,
yeah.
and that was another thing that they I'll say reacted against. But when you look at today, for example, I was watching earlier with the UN, and when President Obama was speaking there, and also he sat down with Prime Minister Netanyahu, and they were in complete cooperative spirit.
Right.
As far as, I mean, it was probably one of the better relationships and better conversations I've seen him have with Netanyahu from Israel. So I agree with you. I don't think there's any concern whatsoever in the Jewish community that Barack Obama is not there to sell it to back them, as well as the fact that it's already been reported that the United States will be against establishing a Palestinian state.
Right.
So they couldn't ask for more. They couldn't ask for more.
But it's not about, again, we're dealing with Republicans, so it's about appearance. It's about what is said and repeated. It's never about the facts. Even though when you watch the media reporting on this, and I try not to watch them too much because I get too mad and then I have to write them, you know. Oh, they've gotten a lot of letters from me. But the point is that they use adjectives that really paint a portrait that isn't real. So they'll say something like, well, yes, the relationship between, you know, the prime minister and the president have been, you know, very strained. They use the word strain. They don't know that. This is something they just
right.
kind of pull out of their back pocket and throw out there because they're trying to paint a particular picture. So I think that people, when they're watching this media, they have to watch, and I'm sure a lot of them do, but they have to watch for these adjectives that come in that are emotional, because that's all that it is that the media has a way, and when I say the media, I'm talking about the corporate media. I'm talking about, you know, the big five that own everything just about. So the media mm-hmm. is there to basically shape the message. And we can talk bully pulpit all we want. When you've got President Obama on the television and all of a sudden the commentator comes on and starts talking over him and then says, oh, and so if he says anything else that's important, we'll let you know. Yeah, it's
right.
I mean,
right.
What is that? And people need to write to the media. They need to start emailing these people, because if we don't, by the time we realize how deep this is, if it isn't already that deep, it will be too late. We have to make our voice heard. The thing about conservatives, they may not have good ideas. They may not have policies that help people. But what they are strategic. They know how to get the message out. They have the media to help them, so that's good for them. But in addition, they write to the media and they accuse them of being liberals. They project out. And in doing that, the media becomes more and more conservative in trying to keep those voices down. They don't want to hear that. They
mm-hmm.
don't want to hear that they're biased. And so they lean closer to the right because the right is kind of calling them names. Well, we got to start calling them names. And not just
exactly.
dinner parties with each other. We've got to get on the phone. I used to call CNN I don't know how many times. Half of the time I would hear 2 minutes worth of a reportage, and I was on the phone. And I could turn off my TV after that because I knew what the day was going to be like on that television channel. And I would call and leave a rant, and then I would email, and then I would fax. Those were the things that I could do, and I did them because I can't wait for somebody else to do anything for me. I can't wait for the president to be my daddy. I can't wait for, you know, my next-door neighbor to decide he might do something or he might not. I've got to do it. And that's what I'm telling other people. If we each don't do it, then no one's doing it, period.
That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. And I want to thank you also because you sent that list of media contacts to us. We actually
mm-hmm.
put that into a document that we put out on the Facebook group Take Back the House in 2012. And, again, I encourage everybody that's listening to the sound of my voice to join that group, bring your friends and acquaintances over into the group. We have some very lively discussions about all the various topics that come up from day to day. We've actually started putting together action plans on how we're going to move out on a lot of these things to try to combat some of them. There are other groups out there as well. If you don't want to come in to Take Back the House in 2012, there's Veterans for Obama. There's Veterans Against Rick Perry. There's the reality of Rick Perry's Texas. You know, so there's plenty that you can do and come out here and make your voice heard. Before we wrap up, Ms. McClendon, I'd like to get your opinion on the two front runners, Rick Perry and Mitt Romney, as far as possibly the challenge that they pose to President Obama in the coming 2012 election.
Well, I don't think either one has a real chance, and I think that that is key to part of how President Obama is going to be reelected, even though we're at 9% unemployment, which it may drop if some of these job pieces get through. But he'll still win, and the reason is this. On the one hand, Rick Perry is just he's a basket case, and he'll say and do anything that is controversial because he's in the Republican primary. But at some point, if he were to win the primaries, now he's going to have to deal with all of the things that he said with the regular voters, you know, the normal people. And that's going to be very difficult for him to get back center. I mean, he's, you know, a secessionist. He's he hates everything. There's just not a positive message there. And, in fact, that's true with Romney as well. Neither one of them have been able to craft the kind of message that Barack Obama did when he was the candidate, Yes, We Can. The only thing that they can do is take back America. That's not really a positive action per se. The policies that go along with it do not help. So I don't think it matters so much which of those two. Romney might be more palatable, but he's just so fake. I mean, you can watch him and see the plastic all over him. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I don't think either one of them are strong candidates. I think the only thing that might hurt us is if they were to pick a vice president, either one of them, like a Mark Rubio, who's Hispanic, because it's all about
right.
The constituents. It's all about how many groups that were for Obama can they reduce in terms of percentage. Because if they can get 7% of, you know, the people that voted last time to vote for them, that's what they need.
Right.
And so they'll get it from wherever they can.
As well as trying to suppress as much as they can on the opposite side.
Right, right. They're operating from many levels, and that's what we have to understand. That's why we can't take anything for granted. That's why we each have to be proactive, because no matter what our intentions are in our heads, that if that doesn't translate into anything concrete, then it's not worth anything. So we really must become the citizen activists that we can be, and if that means canvassing, if it means calling, if it means donating, if it means talking to the neighbors, having the parties, everything. We need to do it all, and all of us need to, and we need to, you know, include our children, make sure they're doing their part because it's their future. And the difference between Obama in the White House in 2012, where we can continue to progress and get rid of some of this 30 years worth of draconian backward thinking out of our government and bringing it back with the Republicans, it's night and day. And I know I want to see the light.
I agree. All right. Well, Ms. McClendon, I want to thank you very much for coming on and expressing your views and your perspective for our listeners. I think it was highly enlightening. I really enjoyed hearing your side of it and your perspective on the issues. And I'm sure that our listeners got quite a bit out of it and hopefully are going to take action from here to do some things. And, again, I'm encouraging everyone to get on to Facebook, but also go out and review the website Democrats for Progress and follow Ms. McClendon's writings. You'll find her there under Joan Ruiz. And please do everything that you can do to turn out the vote in 2012. We need to go out and educate folks about everything that's going on. One thing I will put out right now is we have just set up an email to start taking donations. We're in the process now of setting, and we're trying to debate right now whether we're going to set up a political action committee or a foundation to take in donations so that we can help support the Democratic cause for President Obama's reelection, but also some of the candidates that are running for reelection in some of the various states for representatives and for the Senate. So any donations that you care to send, don't matter whether it's a dollar or what, if you want to send them to wdmb.radio@gmail.com. It's a PayPal site. So please do whatever you can, whatever you can afford to donate, whatever you want to give. We'd appreciate everything as we start to get the ball rolling, to start making some real statements here with the group, getting it to grow. Like I said, in Facebook, our group grew from just a little over 1,000 members last week to 1,224 this week. So we've been growing at a rate of almost 200 members joining on a weekly basis. And at that rate, we ought to get some pretty good muscle going. Lastly, I will leave you with this. There is an article that was written by a gentleman by the name of Mike Lofgren called Goodbye to All That, Reflections of a GOP Operative Who Left the Cult. And it's a very enlightening piece, and it will give you a lot of inside information, as Ms. McClendon brought up, about the strategy of the Republican Party, their main three tenets that they basically aim to, I'll say, support and keep alive. So if everybody will do that, appreciate it. In the meantime, remember our call to action, each one teach one and reach one with the truth, and voter registration now. Don't wait on it. Again, we have other shows that come up on Blog Talk Radio, DJ Patron Monday nights from 7 to 9 for the hip-hop experience, DJ Mr. E on Tuesdays from 8 to 10 in the Jazz and Soul Cafe, Mina Holiday on Sundays from 7 p.m., for the spoken word poetry, and DJ Charles on Saturdays for International House. I thank everybody for joining us tonight and listening in. And until next time, be safe out there and take care.
As the seasons come and go, greater grows the